Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for with SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hello, everybody. It's me, Roscoe, and welcome to another Kings of Anglia podcast special. And today, I'm joined by a very special guest in former Town defender, Thomas Gard. So, Thomas, thank you so much for joining me. How's things?
Things are good. Thanks, yeah. They are actually okay. I'm working within the football, with one of the biggest youth football tournaments in the world here in Denmark. So, I'm very pleased. And, of course, I'm very pleased to see the Tractor Boys back in the top tier.
Yeah, very much so. Town fans are loving it. The Premier League obviously is a tough league, but it's been not a bad start to the season overall. You're saying you're doing some great work so far. Where are you based right now as we speak to you?
Yeah, I live back in Denmark. I live in my town of Aalborg, where I used to play football before I came to England. Living there with my family, my wife and three kids. The same girl I brought to Ipswich 20-odd years ago. So that's a success. And as I said before, I've been working within football since I stopped. Been working as a football agent for nearly 10 years. I had enough of that. I was a football pundit for about 10 years at the same time as I was a football agent. And then when I was out working as a HR manager in an electrician company, I think you would call that. And then in the beginning of this year, I started as a commercial manager for Dana Cup, which is one of the biggest youth football tournaments in the world. Working with that and trying to make good things here for all the young players who's coming from all around the world. This year we had more than 1,000 teams and coming from 50 nations around the world. So it's very good to be back, not in the professional part of the football, but more to help young talents or young football players, boys and girls, to get good experiences.
And of course, you've got experience like yourself, you know, coming through, you know, playing football at a young age. And that's sort of a good way to segue, Thomas, into, you know, your early days in football and growing up in Denmark. You know, what was it like growing up in Denmark? I know your father was a footballer as well. So you sort of got that is probably your influence in terms of getting into football.
Yeah, you know, I remember just, you know, everything was just having fun with the ball, if it was in the schoolyard or if it was in the local ground or if it was wherever. If I could have a ball with me, you know, I had a good time when we were waiting for the school bus. I remember in the mornings we played on the car park. It was all about football and enjoyed it. Of course, when I was young, I also played different sports. In the winter, we couldn't play football, so we played handball here in Denmark. But it was... It was nowhere near the elite as it is now, you know, with all the academies and, you know, you're getting almost professional if you're good enough from when you're 15. So I played. I wasn't the best in my age group until I got maybe 16 years old. Then I started, okay, there's a chance here because I played in Randers, which was a local club. And then Aalborg asked if I wanted to join them in my final year as a youth player. And I went there in 97. I got the captain's armband there and we won the championship. We didn't have the best team, but we had the best group and the best team spirit. So we won the Danish championship on the 19th in 97. And then I turned pro in 98. They offered me a contract. And then I spent, of course, 3 years learning the game as a senior player. And then I got involved in the Danish under-21s. And that's where Josh Burley, he watched me playing a couple of games there and, signed me in 2001. So that's that's how it's it kind of kicked off from when I was young. It was all about having fun, playing with the ball, and there wasn't all this. The professionalism was nowhere near as it is now. People are getting younger and younger. The talents are nursed in a different way now from age of 10, 12. So that has definitely changed the game. But from my point of view and from my start of my career, it was all about having fun with the ball. And at the end, I had a chance to try and fulfill my dream, because I always wanted to be a footballer. And yeah, I did that at the end.
Very much so. And were you always a defender? You know, obviously you played different positions as well, but you know, like anybody, you know, when you're a kid, you get chucked everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And it was the same with me. For most of my youth time, I played as a midfielder. I played also in the under 21s for Denmark. I played as a holding midfielder. It was not after, in my third year as a senior player, I had a coach. He said, "Thomas, I want to try you in a different role. I want to try in defense." And I said, "Okay, let's give it a go," because I wasn't a regular at the time. I was more like throwing into games, and because I was good in the air, they threw me in as a striker the last 10 minutes of the game, or all over the pitch. So I said, if that could stabilize my game and try to be focused on one position, I thought it was a good idea. And from that on, I only played, I think, 10 months as a regular center back before I got sold to England. So I think for me it was very good to stay as a midfielder, because it gave me a lot of things, you know, with the ball as a defender. The one thing I had to learn, of course, was defensive part of the game. But that was something I really learned when I came to Ipswich. You know, Tony Mowbray, he just stopped as a centre back, and he was a first team coach. And you know, I learned a lot from him. You know, all the details which we didn't have a clue about in Denmark, I had to learn that in England to be successful. And I found that hard in the beginning, but of course I learned it, and I had some decent years. It could have been more, but and injuries came into it. But I had some decent years, and I think what I had with me from playing a midfielder for many years, I took that to my game when I came to England. You know, I saw myself as a playing centre back or as playing defender. So for me, it was good that I played as a midfielder for many years. And maybe someone said, "Yeah, I wasn't good enough to make a career as a midfielder," and that would be fair enough. But then again, yeah, I only played a short time as a centre back before I got sold.
Definitely, and obviously, as you said, you moved to Ipswich Town. Had you always have ambitions to go to England, or you know, to obviously kick on with your career?
Well, I didn't have that thought. Those thoughts, as I said before, I only played 10 months as a centre back, and I remember that it was a Monday evening. We played a game against Esbjerg, and after the game, I went to my sister's flat, and my father was there, and he said, "Thomas, by the way, you're sold." I said, "What? Where am I going?" I didn't have a clue about anything. That time, I didn't have an agent. I had to use my father and the Danish Players Association. So they just came and said, "Yeah, the clubs have agreed. We have to move within the next couple of days. We have to sign with Ipswich." I said, "What?" And I was like, "Okay, that sounds really great." And I said, "Oh, unbelievable." I was 21 years, and that was Ipswich was just, they came fifth in the Premier League. And I was like, "Okay, this is very interesting. Let's go for it." Of course, so I just jumped into, jumped into it. And as I said before, I met my now wife. I met her 5 weeks earlier, prior to the sale to Ipswich, so the transfer. So so she just said, "Okay, let's go. Let's see if it works out." And that did. And of course, with the transfer, it came out of nothing, because those days it was a lot less complicated than it is now.
Yeah, very much so. And obviously, you know, obviously there was mobile phones, but not as it is like now. And, you know, the technology now is incredible. As you said, you're playing for the Danish under 21s, and George Burley, did you say he was watching one of the games?
Yeah, I think he came to Odense one game I played against Czech Republic, and I played, you know, one of our best youth games ever. I was just on top of everything. I was in control. I just didn't miss a pass, and I played really, really well. So from that game, I can understand there was interest, but of course they followed up on more games playing for my club at Aalborg. So I was told that George came to Odense to watch that game.
Did you can you remember your first chats with George? And obviously he's got the Scottish accent. I don't know if it was difficult to understand him. He's not that deep, but he's, you know, because he's been in Ipswich for so long, you know, as a player himself. But yeah, I know when I've spoken to different players, sometimes, you know, trying to understand different accents, sometimes the Suffolk accent can be a bit deep as well.
Yeah, that was it wasn't very understandable. I think I met him first at the office of David Sheepshank, in his offices. You know, it was a really nice office, nice furniture, and, you know, Portman Road, and George came in, and you know, he was wearing his suit, and you know, that was really class. And then he started talking. I was like, I have to guess here. And then we did the press conference with me when I signed, and I sat next to him, and I hoped that the questions from the journalist were bit more clear than what he said. Yeah, he was difficult for a young Danish guy who only had English in school. To come over there and speak with the Scottish accent, but it was fun, and I remember the day. It was a great moment for me in my career.
Yeah, I can imagine. And did you know much about Ipswich as a team, as a place as well? Obviously, I know we had our glory years in the 70s and 80s and stuff, but obviously, you know, we're back in the Premier League now at that point. Obviously, we are now, which is fantastic. But yeah, in Denmark, I'm sure they just show the big clubs mainly.
Yeah, actually, there was some talks about Ipswich because we had a striker in Aalborg who I don't know if he was on trial, but he talked to me about that they were interested. And then we had a former Ipswich Town striker, what's it called? Chris Ivolumbu, Chris something. He was a striker.
I know we had Klaus Thompson. Klaus Thompson.
Yeah. I spoke to Klaus as well. I know he was there, but when I was playing in Aalborg, we had a striker for a short time who used to play for Ipswich. And he came and talked good things about it. And also Klaus. So, we didn't know that much about Ipswich. We knew that, of course, from the old days, back in the 80s, you know, when we watched one game a week on Danish television on Saturdays, you know, sometimes Ipswich was shown. But the history, I learned more about that when I came to the club. But for me, you know, going to England and the size of the city and or town, and was similar to where I come from. The Tractor Boys was absolutely perfect because I was born on a farm in Denmark. I drove a tractor when I was 10 years old, so that was just a perfect match. And also, of course, they came as a promoted team and finished fifth. So everybody thought, you know, they had to build on from there. The history, of course, showed different. Bad decisions, I think, was made. But then again, looking back at the time signing there, I thought it was the perfect choice because it was an upcoming club looking to stabilize within the Premier League. But didn't happen.
No, and obviously you signed for a bit of a decent fee as well. I think 1.3 million, if I'm right. And did that give you any pressure, or did you just not really? Obviously, some players don't know about that. Really, you just sort of kick on. You've just been signed. I'm here just to do a job, and yeah.
No, not really. I, as I said, I was only 20 years old, and at that time it was the most expensive defender going out of Denmark to a foreign country. So I was proud of that, and I was. I wouldn't say I was surprised, but I was more proud, and I was I thought it was a good story. For me, I just wanted to get in there, get involved, and you know, I came with a lot of confidence because I was of course I was a profile in my club, and I was young, and you know, nobody could take me down from anywhere. But then I started playing with these senior pros players from the Premier League club, and I was like, okay, yeah, maybe I have a lot of things to learn here still. And I definitely found out also that's why I didn't play that much in my first season, because there is a big difference level wise from the Danish league to the Premier League. And even though I had a lot of confidence as a young player, I learned that as well, and I had a lot of things to learn Coming back to Tony Mowbray, you know, I had a lot of things to learn defensively. I had some ups and downs my first year, but then again, I did get my full debut. I did score my first goal in the Premier League, so I had some good experiences as well.
Very much so. Which sort of players helped you settle? I know it was a good group of lads, and that, you know, obviously Matty Holland, you know, what a captain, what a legend at the football club. Obviously had good old Herman Hrodason as well, the Icelandic giant. Which players sort of helped you settle?
Definitely Herman. Herman, he took me under his wings from day one. I remember, I think it was the first or second day when I still was in a hotel. I don't know, Anna, my girlfriend, she weren't in England at the time. So he took me, let's go out and play golf. So we went for a game of golf. And Herman was great. We spent a lot of time with him and Ragnar. We spent a lot of time with Fabian Wilnes and also Martin Reuser. So the four of us, we spent a lot of time together. We didn't spend so much time with the British players. They kind of kept them to themselves. But when we, of course, when we were training, there was nothing there. But in our spare time, you know, also because the girls understood each other well. So it was really good. And then, of course, we rented a house, a small house in Margate Road. And next, one of our neighbors there, Paul and Louise. Paul was a policeman, still is, and Luis worked for BT, I think, at that time. But they, they're still great, and they meant a lot to us. And we spent a lot of time with them as well over the years. The last years it hasn't been so much because of they live in Woodbridge now. But they were very, very important to us as well, because we knew someone out of football, outside of the football club. So they were absolutely great for us. And then, of course, we moved to another house in Ipswich, and the neighbors there was Richard Hall and Sarah, and I spent a lot of time with them as well. They had a Labrador, we had a Labrador, so they got friends. And so Richard and Sarah, we spent a lot of time with them as well from when we were living there.
That's nice. Yeah, shout out to them. And obviously, Thomas, you mentioned, you know, you didn't play that much in that season. Did George sort of have conversation with you in terms of just needing to get that experience and learning the way of, you know, English football? Of course, you went on to make your debut against West Ham. It was a defeat, but I'm sure that was a milestone in your career. Went, oh, you know, I played in the top four of English football.
Yeah, no, I think the style and the mentality from George was, you have to learn yourself. You have to be curious. You have to be willing to learn and ask questions. It wasn't like he said, okay, Thomas, you are you're close, you have to work on this and this, and then you're getting, you know, within the team and stuff. I had to find out myself. And also with my debut, I was told the day before, you're playing tomorrow. I said, okay. And I saw the team sheets, and I was playing against Paolo Di Canio and Frederic Canute, and very good players. And then Jermain Defoe came on, and I made a mistake, and he ran down and scored to 3-2, and we lost the game, and I was pissed. But in the big picture, I can see now, I'm proud when I can tell, you know, all the people and myself that my debut was against players like that. And they say, okay, that's kind of respectful. It was great with the debut, but again, as I said before, with George, you know, you had to earn your own right to be there. You know, he bought you, he put you in a squad, but you have to develop yourself, of course, with all the staff and that. But you had to be strong physically, but also mentally to get through and get your chances.
And you came late on in the Inter Milan game, Alan Armstrong. You came very late on, but you can sort of say you played in Europe as well. You know, only made a few minutes against Inter Milan, but that was a great night at Portland Road.
Yeah, it was. It was buzzing. And I came on, I think, one of my touches. I tried to score from the halfway line against Francesco Toldo, who's like 10 feet tall. And he was, but then again, I just tried to get most out of it. And it was a great experience. And, you know, that campaign, you know, again, you know, Ipswich in Europe, it was great, even though, you know, what happened afterwards wasn't great, but it was a great experience, and there was a belief when I came. Everybody was just thinking we can only move forward from here, and that's why they brought players, international players, Finley George, which, you know, had a great career prior coming to Ipswich, and they bought Matteo Cerini, the goalkeeping, you know, expensive players at the time. But it was great with all the traveling, and when we went to Moscow and we went to Gothenburg, and it was I think maybe the year after. But then again, that is special, you know, playing in Europe is special. I almost got to the Champions League with Aalborg. We lost with one goal against Dynamo Kiev in 99. So yeah, going to Europe for a club like Ipswich was just amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, great night at Portland Road. And Armstrong header to win the game, but obviously, yeah, the second leg at San Siro. I know Town fans went out in force, and you were there. Obviously didn't feature, but yeah, just being part of that must have been a great. And we've got to go on to your goal against Sunderland next up. So you played a few games, and this was a fantastic, you know, the final game of 2001. And yeah, we won the game 5-0 against Sunderland. Finidi George scored a great goal in that game himself. Yeah. But yeah, yourself, yeah, you know, take you back to scoring your first goal in English football and in the Premier League.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it was I was told pretty late that I was playing again. I played against was it Phillips and Niall Quinn with Mark Venus and I, and I think we played really, really well. And yeah, and then of course the goal. To score a goal, but then again in the Premier League is unbelievable, and I was very, very proud. And later on, when I moved to Birmingham, we became really good friends with Thomas Sorensen. He moved from Sunderland to Aston Villa, so I've teased him quite a few times with me scoring my only Premier League goal against him in a game where we were just on top of things. And yeah, that was, you know, as high as you can get. I was really, really proud. And then the following game against Charlton, I started again, and then I played crap, and we lost 3-2, I think. And that was me for my first year season at Ipswich, really. And then, yeah, of course, we got relegated, which was sad. But for me, it was good because I came into the team. I felt sorry for George. He had to go. But yeah, Joe Royley came in and gave me a chance, and yeah, that was good. But that first goal and again at Portman Road was very special.
Yeah, what a game! And that was a point where we thought, you know, we could potentially stay up here, and then unfortunately we didn't. But yeah, obviously, yeah, he didn't play again after that Charlton game. Did George just sort of say, you know, just be, obviously we're fighting to stay up? Did he have much conversation with you, or did you just sort of? No,
I don't remember it. I knew that I didn't perform well. I'm very happy that George gave me a couple of chances because it made me realize that I probably wasn't ready to be a regular in the Premier League. At that time, I was 22. So yeah, he didn't have to say anything. I was, I knew that, you know, that I had to work on things to become a regular. I could be used now and again, but he didn't have to talk to me really.
That's fair enough. And yeah, obviously, yeah, relegation was confirmed, and obviously now back in the first division. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, you know, George Sadler gets sacked and Joe Royle comes manager. Can you remember that day when, you know, the players, you get told that, yeah, it's just time I got going to have a new manager, because George has been at the club for so long. And now, yeah, Joe has become a manager. He's another big character.
Yeah, he was. But also with the relegation, we had to hear about all the finances, which was getting extremely poor. We had to take pay cuts, which we did, and stuff like that. So it wasn't only the relegation on the football pitch. It was also outside, and it was also about our contract. So there was a lot of frustrations, and we lost, of course, players, good players. My mate Herman, he left us at some time going to Charlton. So so a lot of things happened there. But then when Joe came in, and things started to calm down a little bit, so we could focus on the football. He changed the formation to back three sometimes, and he got me a chance there, and I really felt that in a short space of time I became a regular. Definitely from when we were playing Portsmouth away around Christmas was I remember him saying in the, at halftime, he said, "When are you going to score some goals?" He told me, and then 10 minutes into the second half, I scored the first out of three games in a row at that time. So that was quite fun. But he gave me a chance, and Joe was a completely different character to George. He was this kind uncle, you can say that. You put around his arms around you and say, "You're good enough, and go out and enjoy yourselves." And I remember that on the sheet in the dressing room before each game, the last thing Joe told us at each game was enjoy. And I've used that quite a lot afterwards as well. But Joe was very good for my career, because that's how I got interesting for also other clubs.
Yeah, you mentioned you scored three goals in a row over that Christmas period, so it was a good Christmas time for you. Portsmouth, then Leicester, then Walsall. So yeah, that was, as a defender, you must be buzzing. You're scoring goals and getting the goal bonus as well.
Yeah, I can't remember. I got the bonus. I don't think so. It didn't matter. But the fun thing was that I was playing to what I could, and in a way, I felt confidence from the manager, and I must say, that's what most players want, feel confident and feel that they're important. And Joe made me feel important, and that's why I performed as well. I remember we came seventh, I think, so close to the playoffs. But I remember I was really, really tired, because I played a lot of games, and then the championship of first division was very tough, and I haven't never experienced anything like it, because the games are tough, funny but tough. And from my point of view, I was happy when the season was over, because it gave me a lot of belief going into the next season. And then, we came back from our holidays. There were still problems with the finances, and we still have to do thing about how to help the club. West Bromley came in, and I thought they bought me for a bargain, but I don't know. Maybe the coaches just wanted me out. I believe and I hope that because they had to sell whatever they could to get any kind of money, that's why they sold me, and not because they really wanted to get rid of me.
I think obviously a lot of different players left that summer as well. And I meant to say this earlier, but obviously you cut your hair, you shaved off the gold, the golden blonde locks. What was the thinking true. Behind that?
No, that's true. That was me adapting to the British style of play. I couldn't come in and look like a beach boy there at the time. I didn't know that when I came, but of course I needed to change my look, because I hoped that the strikers would be a bit more scared of me, and that would help me in going into the challenges and stuff like that. So, and also just to show that I was capable of going for challenges and play dirty.
What did your missus think of that, though? Losing the hair.
I can't remember really. I think she knows she loved me anyway, any hair I would think. But I think she thought it was funny in the beginning, but also understood that I couldn't look like this this long young boy band member.
Very much so. And obviously, you go and join West Brom. How do you look back at your overall spell at Ipswich Town, living in Suffolk, and just playing the amount of games you did play in that final season? And as you said, missing out in the playoffs. It was a good season as a whole in terms of what was going on in the background. And obviously, Joe's first full season. Obviously, when you obviously do leave and go to West Brom, Town himself, getting the playoffs a few times under Joe. As a whole, how do you look back at Ipswich Town?
as a whole, I only have most good memories. I really enjoyed Ipswich. The fans were amazing. The ground was unbelievable. The town was good. We really enjoyed living there. It was close to everything. Close to when bringing people over, they could fly into Stansted, and we really enjoyed it, and we made some friendships which last, and and all the special people there, the gatesman, I think it was Brian, he was called at Paul Marone, or Windy, the who made food for us at the training ground, and you know, these special people, they were there no matter who, players or staff came in and out, you know, they were there, and you know, I remember that being so vital to the club, and the atmosphere of the whole club was created by these key persons, which was not players, it was not staff, football staff, it was the right staff. And I remember that the kit man, Matt, who's still the physio. Yes, I saw him on the pitch against Liverpool there. I said, Matt is still there, that's great. So I have to tell him, say hello for me as well. So these persons are just they're so important, and I remember that that's why they helped me be feeling welcome, and my memories of history. Also, when people ask me who's which time did you enjoy the most, and I said definitely Ipswich on the personal side. Football wise, I would love to have done more. But I got a chance to do more at West Brom and show what I could have done. That's just how it was. But yeah, only good memories from Ipswich.
That's good to hear. And have you had a chance to come back? I know it's difficult, you know, with, you know, when you're still playing and other things now being back in Denmark. Have you had a chance to come back? Obviously, you've got kids now as well. So
yeah,
I would have bring them over.
No, I haven't been back. I would love to come, and I reached out to the chairman, he never come back to me. So, maybe one day we can go back. I've got a son who's 17 now, and I've got a daughter 15 and a daughter 8, and they would love to come and have a look where mom and dad lived and where I played football. So hopefully one day we can bring them over and get them on a round trip.
That'd be good to hear. That'd be very good. Then, as you say, moved to West Brom. Did you have much say in that? I know you said at the time it was a bargain sort of signing, but is it more like, we need money, sorry Thomas, you got to go?
Yeah, I definitely felt that I had to go. There was some kind of pressure. If it was, I can't remember if they said, you know, you have to leave, otherwise you won't play anyway, and stuff like that. But I felt I had to. And I was, when I spoke to Gary Maxson at West Brom, you know, I could see, you know, he really, really wanted me, and I could be very, very useful for his side. So there wasn't really a doubt that I wanted to stay at Ipswich, but then again, I had to leave. So I had to make my mind up and say, okay, yeah, I'm leaving. So that's the feeling, was that I had to leave, definitely.
And obviously you go and haunt town in your first game against us in that 4-1 win at the Hawthorns, and scoring, you know. I must have been feared, though, a weird feeling, you know, playing against your town for the first time, but then also scoring as well. But, you know, you're doing a job for your new team.
Yeah, it was, and it was in the beginning of the season, and I felt, you know, we had a really strong team. Of course, we got promoted as well, and after the game, I came into the dressing room, and all the staff was just, they were just going crazy. They were just so happy, and they were screaming and saying, hey, what is going on? We won 4-1, and, you know, quite convincing. Yeah, but, you know, that was back in the days, you know, and they said that they played a lot of money on me as a first goal scorer. So of course you cannot do that today, but back then, and so they made a bit of money on me as a first goal scorer. So that's why they were extra happy, not only for the result but also for me at that day. So it was a special as well to play against Ipswich. But I felt we with West Brom, you know, we had a much stronger team than Ipswich that season.
Yeah, very much so. And obviously, quickly go into your playing for Denmark, because obviously that's when you got the call up to play for Denmark. And it was a special debut, because obviously it was at Old Trafford against England. And you won. So yeah. That was an amazing debut for playing for your country.
Yeah, it was. It was unbelievable. And bringing my family over and living in England, it was massive. And that time, the national team coach, Morten Olsen, he really liked me. And and I got involved in the next game as well against Poland, I think, and I scored a goal there as well. And I thought, okay, now we're moving forward. And I want to be that's a chance for me being a national team regular here. And then in a game against Everton, I bruised my ankle and had to call the coach and say I can't meet up. We're playing World Cup qualifier against Ukraine, and I couldn't play. And from now on, my injury started. And if I wouldn't have been injured in that game, I believe I could have played 20 or 25 caps for Denmark. And but that didn't happen, unfortunately. But you can't do anything about it. But the first one again, I haven't got so many caps, so I definitely remember the ones I played. So special one at Old Trafford.
Yeah. And in England, we have obviously they get given caps, but in Denmark, what's the tradition there? Do you get anything?
No, not really. You get like a needle with the Danish FA logo on, and that's pretty much it. But again, my friends Paul and Louise from Ipswich, they actually had a cap made for me. I've got that as well. So that was quite funny.
I like that. And obviously, you know, in the Denmark squad, there's some characters. I'll have to bring up Thomas Graversen because he's a big character. But yeah, you're playing with some of these players who are, you know, big characters in English football as well, because Thomas was playing, you know, for Everton.
Yeah, exactly. Jon Dahl Thomason, who used to play for Newcastle, he was there as well. Yeah. And I remember I didn't know Thomas before we went to the national team together, but we had the same agents. He lived in Bolton, so he hooked us up before we went with Denmark, so we could just meet up and try to connect a little bit. But of course, I was still young. I was probably 23, 24 at the time. I looked into a really good future, a bright future, going into the national team as well. And I was, of course, hoping that one day I would be the one, Thomas Graversen or Jon Dahl Thomason, or one of the stars of the team. I would probably never been the biggest star, but I could have definitely been more involved with the national team if it wouldn't have been for all the injuries. But then again, you can't do anything about it now. I can live on my memories, and I still believe that I had a decent career.
And then obviously you did get promoted though with West Brom. That must have been a great feeling. And obviously player of the year that year as well. So, you know, a very good season in your first spell at the Baggies.
It was good for me, and it was also good for me to prove the way I had to leave Ipswich, you know, to prove. It was kind of a motivation for me because I wanted to prove that I could be a good player. I could be an important player for a team. I had a really, really strong season, and we got promoted player of the year, the final away game against Reading, 4,000 Baggies fans dressed up as Vikings in honor of me. So, you know, that was special. It's not easy to be player of the year. I remember I came second in my final year at Ipswich after Matt Holland. So I was pretty close there. So I had a good season at Ipswich. Nobody can take that away from me. But I would have loved to stay for many more seasons. These highlights are definitely ones I'm proud of.
Definitely. And then obviously, yeah, you're now back playing in the Premier League. And now you're going to hope to play as much as you can. Obviously, Brian Robson then becomes manager as well. A legend in the game himself. You know, what was your relationship with him?
I think it's good, and over the years I've kept contact with him. I met him at took my son when he was 11 to a game against at Old Trafford. Met up with Brian there. I've been in contact with him over the years. Fantastic person and a fantastic coach as well. Just what we needed to avoid the regulation. To be relegated, and that's why the first year he was there. We made the great escape, for the first time ever. So in that way, that's what I always say. You know, when I was playing abroad, I didn't play for championships, but I created history anyway, being involved in the team who made a great escape for the first time. So yeah, people are proud of winning things, but I was proud of avoiding relegation.
Yeah, I was just quickly looking before I came onto the chat, looking at that season as a whole for West Brom. And yeah, it was like the final day, you know, it was Survival Sunday, you know, Sky Sports, they always big it up, don't they? And yeah, like obviously West Brom, that most of that season you were in the bottom of the table. But, you know, that final day, getting that win, that must have been a great day as a whole, being there at the Hawthorns. And yeah, I'm sure Baggy fans can remember that day very fondly.
Yeah, it was. And also we needed three other results to go our way. And they finally did that, and everything just went crazy. So that was definitely also a highlight of my career. And the beginning of the following season was okay, and then I had some bad performances and got out of the team and tried to fight my way back in, and then all these injuries started, so I had to retire.
Yeah, let's talk about those injuries, Thomas. I know it's probably a harsh, you know, horrible subject to talk about sometimes, but, you know, what sort of injuries were there? And, you know, obviously you said you had a few injuries before that, but was there a few that you just felt, oh, this doesn't seem right?
Yeah, but this thing was, I felt it was a groin issue. I always felt it was a groin issue. So I had different kinds of surgery and the physios tried everything. I tried everything, and to the best of our knowledge. But after I retired, I had a year out, and I started slowly again. I couldn't accept that I had to retire. So I got in contact with a Danish physio. He's actually the physio of Kevin Magnussen, our Formula One driver now. And when he looked at me the first time, he said, "Thomas, I can't understand why you didn't play." You know, he didn't look at my groin. He looked at my body and he looked at my back, and my back was completely a mess. It was out of order. And he said, "You should have known that, or the physio should have known that, you know, maybe it was a groin problem, but you should have looked at the body as a whole, and you should have looked at your back, and you can see your lower back is just a complete mess. You know, you could have maybe avoided this break for a couple of years if you had the right treatment." So that's why I kind of tried to make a comeback in Denmark, and I played for another 3 years. It wasn't the best. I never came to a top level because there was still issues with my body, but it's frustrating that I think I maybe didn't have to retire if I would have been treated the right way. But of course, I can't blame anyone, because the people who looked after me did it to their best abilities. I feel a bit unlucky with that, but you know, that's life. I tried to get, as I said, get a comeback and play a couple of years in Denmark, and then I had to retire because of my age, and the body wasn't really, really good.
Because obviously when you first retired, you were 27, so that's, you know, that is a very young age. I know some people, they retire really, really young, like Kieran McKenna, the Ipswich Town manager. He retired at 21 because of injuries, and of course he's gone on to manage the stuff. But obviously you said you returned back to Denmark. Did you always feel like you were always gonna go back to Denmark to sort of set up your life? Because obviously England, you came here to play football, but you feel like, you know, in terms of family and stuff, you think Denmark was the perfect place?
Yeah, definitely. I always wanted to go back. You know, I'm a family person. I like it when I know everybody is around me and I'm close to everything. So yeah, definitely. That was always the case that we were going back to Denmark. But it happened maybe 5 or 6 years too early. And as I said, you know, I was 27. I was involved with the national team. I had a couple of good seasons. Yes, of course, I was in and out of the team with injuries, but I had some performances that I believe that I could have played definitely for a top championship club or Premier League club for another 2 or 3, 5 years. But that didn't happen. So as I said, I've thought of this many times, but yeah, you can't do anything about what happened in life. You can only look forward and try to get the most of it. This talk here, appreciate that, because I'm thinking back on all the memories I had from that time. You know, sometimes you forget about that in everyday life. But I know I wasn't the best player there. I wasn't the biggest star, but I tried to get the most out of my career. And I appreciate all the people, all the fans who supported me when I was playing. And I also I'm aware that I should probably have done more. I could have done more training with my, you know, fitness with my body, trying to make it better, stronger, so it could cope with all the things it had to. But everybody always say, you know, if you knew what I know now back then, it would have been a completely different story. So, but again, you can't do anything about it. You just have to move forward and try to learn from your ups and downs and take it from there.
Definitely. How are you feeling now? You know, you got any pains? And I know obviously you're a bit older now, but is still effects of, you know, you're playing football?
Yeah, I played some in Denmark called old boys football just for fun for quite a few years. I finished that a couple of years ago. I played in the old boys national team. We go out and play some events around in Denmark. But now, you know, it wasn't good. You know, I can still feel my body. I can feel my my back is definitely not very strong or very good. So, I could also do more training, to be fair. I'm the kind of getting more lazy the older I get, so I should go to the fitness and do my strengthening work, but now I can't be bothered, to be fair. I play a bit of golf, and sometimes I can play golf because the bag is okay, and sometimes I can't because it's shite. So that's just how it is now. So I don't play football anymore.
That's fair. And you mentioned earlier in the chat you became an agent for a little while. Any players that you were part of those deals? I don't know if you were part of this deal. You probably wasn't. But obviously, you played alongside a future Town player in Jonas Knudsen, who obviously is another Danish player. You played with him briefly at the end of your career. Did you have much conversations with him when he came to Ipswich?
Yeah, I did. And he talked to me before he came to Ipswich. Of course, I only had good things to say, so I just thought he should leave. Yeah, I was an agent for almost 10 years, and Jonas was one of the players I tried to nick when I became an agent, but he was too loyal to his even though we were good friends, and we sometimes keep in contact, he would definitely be good to have. And Jonas was a great guy, and you know, you also know him, you know, he had a good spell at Ipswich, you know, some good seasons there, and I told him to go there, and I tried to nick him as an agent. I moved another Danish player. He went to Brentford, Henrik Dalsgaard. I took him to Brentford from Sulte Waregem in Belgium. But I was an agent for 10 years. But again, we had a company, and it was a good company, but I just had enough of it. I felt you couldn't trust any people. You couldn't trust your own players. You couldn't trust agents. It was just like the Wild West, if you can say that, and there's too much focus on money instead of trying to help people. So I wanted to look myself into the mirror and said, yeah, I want to be decent. I want to do things properly. And I felt I couldn't stay in that business. So I just pulled the plug and left.
Yeah. And as you said earlier, chat as well, you know, you're doing some great things at the Dana Cup. Let us know a little bit more about that, and do you any big plans, you know, for the future? It sounds like, you know, when I was doing some research, it just looks fantastic. And you said big tournaments, you know, country, you know, people coming from all around the world.
Yeah, it's a tournament who's been active for more than 40 years. And we're building, trying to be not bigger as such, but better all the time. We need to be stronger. We need to make it more more fun to get here, so all these young people can get good experiences. And then my focus is, of course, the partnerships. And I've got an event area where we got Tivoli and Big Tens. We got eSport tent. We got all sorts of things. So I'm trying to make, from my side, make it interesting for people to get good partnerships, sponsorships, but also activities for all these kids and stuff like that. So it's one of the biggest youth tournaments in the world. When you look into to people coming here, we got 20,000 players, 10,000 supporters, and we got 4,000 volunteers helping us out. So it's very big and very good. Each year, yeah, more than 1,000 teams come back to visit us. So it's not an elite cup. It's more for everyone. Boys and girls from age 11 to 19. It's all about, of course, making good experiences through football. I've been into the elite environment for most of my professional career, but for now it's so giving for me to be here because Danakop supports a women's football club called Fortuna Hjørring, which is one of the most successful women's teams in Denmark, history of women's football. So we have this part that we have the professional part, and also there's an amateur club, Fortuna Amateurs, and then we have the Danakop. So it's a really good organization. We also have we were the first to build academy for girls in Denmark. So we have actually an academy for girls playing football as well. So it's very interesting. So even though Danakop is for everyone, we also have this this part with the professional side of it. So it's very interesting. Of course, girls football are not the same as men's. You know, England are doing really well on the women's side, and hopefully they will it will go through to other countries like Denmark at some point. So it's a really funny organization, and there's so many legs to this. But it's nice to be back into football, but not always have to make results day in day out, if you can say that.
Definitely nice. Yeah, it's great to hear you're back in football, and such great things you're doing over there. Well, Thomas, it's been a pleasure. A few more questions. One more is: did you keep much of your sort of stuff when you played football in terms of your shirts? Did you swap many shirts during your career?
One of the things I regret is definitely that I didn't swap any shirts. And I hate myself for that, because when I look back and see the players I could have asked shirts for, Ronaldo, Rooney, Shearer, Henri, Drogba, that would have meant a lot to me now, also because of the family and the son who's playing football. And he said, why didn't you do that? And I said, because at that time, I couldn't care less. It wasn't important to me because I was a footballer. I wasn't there to get somebody's shirts. So that was my focus back in the day. But I should have done it. I regret it so much that I only have a few shirts left, because most of them I've given away, the ones I had from my clubs. So that's definitely one to regret.
Yeah. And as you said, you haven't been back to watch your town, but I'm sure you've been watching town from afar, obviously back in the Premier League. What have you thought from, looking from the outside in, obviously been successful the last few years?
I think, that they promoted the two seasons in a row. It goes really, really quick. And it's kind of the same from when I was there. Everything went too quick in a way. But I think now when you see... I think they're more clever. They learn from what they've done earlier. Now they are buying players, getting players in from championship clubs more. So they say, okay, that's just my feeling. If we stay up, great. If not, we're building a squad who can get promoted again, instead of just doing everything they can to overspend for players, expensive players. If you don't succeed, you're in big trouble. So I think the club is doing really great in the strategy of making a squad, because it can do well in the Premier League, but it will do even better if they can keep it from next season. But I'm really happy to see the Portman Road buzzing. Was the first game against Liverpool, even though the result wasn't good, but there was so much energy from the players and Portman Road, and I must I can only imagine how it's been the last couple of years with all the successes. It must have been great to be part of that and be at Portman Road. But I, of course, I hope that they will get their first wins very soon, and because they are getting close. And so it's all these small margins who has to tip your way, and then you get a couple of results, and if you get a couple of results there, you know, you get the confidence, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody was just grow as individuals and as a group, and then yeah, why not? Of course they can stay and hopefully stay in the Premier League.
Hopefully indeed. Well, Thomas, it's been a pleasure. Any other business, any other messages to the Town fans watching? And just, as you said, you probably the most enjoyable time of your career was at Ipswich Town, as you said.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody remembers me, but I was only there for a couple of years, and I was, as I said, I wasn't the number one player, definitely not the first year. But again, for me personally, I got some good history with me from the games I played the second year. I believe that, you know, I did well, and I can be proud of that. I would have loved to have stayed for many more years, but things just happened for a reason and I had to leave. But I just wanted to say hello to everybody there and thank them for the time I had, because it was... It was definitely important in my journey growing up in a foreign country to help me getting settled, and the friendship I've had and the love I felt for the fans was just unbelievable. So I want to thank everybody for that, and and give them all my very best wishes for the future.
Indeed, yeah. Hopefully we can get you over again at some point and return to Portman Road, because it's a very different, you know, it's been very looked after by the new owners, the new American owners, and obviously the town is buzzing at the moment because they've got a Premier League football club once again. Well, Thomas, thanks so much for joining me. Thanks everyone for watching another Kings of Anglia podcast special, and we'll see you next time. Bye-bye for now.
What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and we're driving through the States in the Bluffmobile, and the best thing that we can do is play our favorite casino-style games on SpinQuest. They have over 1,000 games, including live dealer, blackjack, and craps, with tons of slots and unlimited options. You can get a $30 coin pack for just $10 for new users. Sign up today. Go to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.